Ave and welcome to Emperors of Rome, a podcast looking at the rulers of the ancient Roman Empire. I'm your host, Matt Smith, and with me as always is Dr. Rhiannon Evans, a lecturer in ancient Mediterranean studies at La Trobe University. This is episode XXIII, Romans versus Christians. A couple of months ago, we put a call out on the podcast for by request topics, and one of the ones that we heard loud and clear was that you'd like to know about the interactions between Romans and Christians. Most notably, listener Eric Bloom was the one who first requested religion in Rome and religious tolerance. So given that it's Easter, here is our Christian episode. Just a bit of a note beforehand that in this context we'll be using the word cult a lot because to the Romans, the Christians were a cult. We are sticking to the historical evidence and the Roman text. And there's also the very important fact that history has been written by the victors. With that in mind, here's Rhiannon Evans.
Our whole dating system is based on when we think Christ was born, but we've probably got the date slightly wrong. Christ probably wasn't born at that juncture between BC and AD. If what's in the Gospel of Luke is correct and there's a census, then that was in about 7 or 8 CE. So around that time, wherever you date it, it's the Augustan period. Because remember, Augustus was in charge from 27 BCE to 14 CE when he died. And then if Christ lived for 33 years, then that brings us into the Tiberian period. So we're talking about those first two emperors, Augustus and Tiberius. That's the period of his lifetime and the period during which his initial early followers would have grown up. And we have little bits of evidence about their existence throughout the early emperors and then throughout the first century CE. So the evidence is scattered, but we can see the Romans are talking about them a little bit during that time.
What would Romans have thought the Christian religion to be then? What was it to them?
Well, for the Romans, there are lots of competing religions, but maybe competing is the wrong word because there are lots of gods that are part of their everyday life. We might think of the 12 Olympian gods, but the Romans actually have lots of other gods that we don't hear so much about who are just very much more everyday. So there are gods of doorways and gods of fire and gods of fortune and all of those kinds of things. And if they could integrate another religion easily into that, then it wasn't really something they would have thought about too much. But they did have some cults and sects that they had problems with, and it's more to do with their behavior than their beliefs or the way they might have thought about their behavior. So initially, the cult of Bacchus was a bit of a problem for the Romans because they thought it was associated with weird nighttime practices and overt sexuality and things that might lead the women astray in particular. So they might have thought of it in that kind of way. And certainly there's evidence from some Christian writers that they had to defend themselves against accusations of things like cannibalism, which lots of people think, and it makes sense, might be associated with the sacrament.
The body of Christ.
Yeah, with ingesting the body of Christ, of doing that. If you take that literally, then that might lead people to think that you are eating human beings. So it might have been quite easy for the Romans to think of this as a deviant sect. And indeed, the evidence we have from Roman texts suggests that they did think of it as some kind of degenerate society.
So Jerusalem is a significant distance from Rome. Was the rise of cults like this common far from Rome once you get further away from the influence of the empire?
I would say it's happening everywhere. To go back to Bacchus again, that's a cult that comes in from the east. And eventually that does actually get integrated into normal Roman religion. But they have others like Cybele coming in from the east. The east generally seems to be a place that generates religious groups that may or may not get integrated within core Roman religion. And also, there seems to be some kind of what we might call sort of millennial feel around this time. So an idea that there's going to be a big change and that might be associated with a new god. Indeed, in an important Augustan text by Virgil, his earliest poems are called the Eclogues. And Eclogue 4 is about the birth of a new child who's kind of a new hope for the future. Now, in historical terms, that's probably the child of Augustus's sister, Octavia, with Mark Antony, which sort of brings together Octavian and Mark Antony in a political alliance. But Christians later on read that as being about the birth of Christ, that Virgil had foreseen that. But it may well be that Virgil himself is responding to this general kind of cultural appeal of a rebirth of society and symbolizing it with the birth of a child, because that seems to be happening elsewhere as well. So there seem to be some sects that talk about, and you could read Christianity in this way, a kind of end of world idea that everything's going to be changed, everything will die and be reborn. Okay, so that kind of apocalyptic idea, there seems to be that sort of moment happening here. And it's not necessarily just in the East, but a lot of the new sects that come into Rome tend to come from the East in general.
So why would the Romans have a problem with Christians?
Well, there are a couple of reasons. Now, we can theorize that one of the reasons might have been that Christianity, like Judaism, is monotheistic. And of course, Roman religion is polytheistic. They have lots of gods. That's a possible clash. If they come across another polytheistic religion, they can embrace those gods and it's not a problem. But if your core belief is that there is just one God, you're basically rejecting Roman religion. And of course, the Romans had deified emperors, well, certainly when Augustus dies in 14 CE, and they'd already deified Julius Caesar. So that would be a problem. However, it's not actually something the Romans talk about. That's us theorizing, and I think it's a reasonable theory. When they talk about it, elite Romans talk about them being a kind of secret society, a college, that they have meetings, and that's a bit worrying to the Romans because that suggests to them conspiracy. So it's sort of more along political lines that they're slightly worried about the Christians, that they don't quite understand what they do. They have secret practices, that they meet in circumstances the Romans aren't entirely happy with. So they see it as possible treason, possible conspiracy going on.
But there is quite harsh punishment for Christians, well, cults in general, really, anybody who doesn't believe in the Roman religions or don't follow and observe the Roman practices is quite harshly punished.
Well, it's not quite as simple as you need to be following Roman religion, because Roman religion is so diverse. You know, you might decide that the god that you're going to pray to is Fortuna, but you do have to accept the divinity of the emperor. You have to be able to pay respect and give sacrifices to the emperor's particular shrines. The punishment's harsh, but then Roman punishment for a lot of crimes is harsh. And because being a Christian might be aligned with treason, it sort of makes sense to the Romans that the punishment might be death, because, of course, the punishment for treason absolutely is death. Now, I'm not trying to excuse execution at all, but in terms of the Roman mindset and the kind of punishment that you get for particular crimes, it's perfectly in line with that.
Yeah, yeah. So when did Christianity come to the attention of Rome, and what do we know about the interactions with early Christians?
We know very, very little from the early period. The best account we have of a first encounter is a very negative one and quite famous, and it's during the Neronian period, so under the Emperor Nero, and an event that we've talked about before, the Great Fire of 64 CE. Now, the account itself comes from Tacitus, so it's written about 120 CE. So you can see we're already, 100 years or so after the events of the origins of Christianity. But Tacitus tells us that after the fire in 64, Nero rebuilt Rome, as we've already discussed, but he couldn't quite quell the rumors that he had been responsible for the fire. And so he decided to find a scapegoat. Now, this is obviously an amazing account because the scapegoat was the Christians. So historians get very excited that this is a very early mention of Christians and in a Roman text. It's actually very brief. It's just a paragraph long in Tacitus's annals. He explains that this is a sect that's grown out of the originator is a man called Crestus, as he calls him. That's quite common in Roman texts to have this variant spelling. You sometimes get an I there, you sometimes get an E there. And he says this man was killed by Pontius Pilate. He was put on trial and killed by Pontius Pilate. Some people think that that's an interpolation into the text. In other words, Christians added that afterwards. Most people accept that this is Tacitus's genuine account. And he says that Nero then basically imposed very harsh punishments on the Christians. He executed them, but not only that, he executed them in quite showy ways. He put them on as a show. He kind of ridiculed them. So he put them into animal skins and had wild beasts attack them. He set them alight to have them serve as human torches at night. He opened up his gardens for these executions. He had it done at the circus. So he sort of made a spectacle of it.
Is all of this in Tacitus's paragraph?
All of this is, I know, this is. I'm basically, in a way, I'm making it longer than Tacitus's paragraph. Yes, it's all there.
But you used a lot of quotation fingers there while you were talking. People at home can't see your quotation fingers.
Oh, damn, you've given my secrets away.
So how likely is this? Tacitus is writing well after the event. It's not the only account of what happened in the fire of Rome.
That's true. I mean, Suetonius talks about the fire as well, and this does come out of Tacitus's account. And there's no doubt that for Tacitus, this is something he can use to blacken Nero's character. But he does say that people actually felt sorry for the Christians because of Nero's treatment and that it didn't reflect well on Nero. So, yeah, he could be using this for his own ideological purposes.
There's a lot inferred from that one paragraph of Tacitus to the extent that Nero executed Peter and Paul. If you go to the Roman prison, has there, here's where Peter and Paul were kept before their execution, that you can go and see that today in Rome. There's an altar and a shrine there set up to St. Peter. But none of that is in the writings of Tacitus.
None of it comes from Roman sources. We can certainly say that. And Tacitus doesn't mention them by name. In fact, Jesus Christ is the only one he mentions, and he calls him Crestus, as I've said. So, no, we don't know that from Roman texts.
What about in later periods? What do we know about the interactions between Romans and Christians? Were Christians persecuted? Were they thrown to the lions in the Colosseum? Do we have records along the lines of that?
We don't. And really, the account we get in Tacitus, brief as it is the most description we get of the punishments, and certainly the most detailed description we get of punishment of Christians. We don't know that Christians ever appeared in the Colosseum in Rome. There's no evidence to suggest that at all. It's become very much part of popular consciousness, and so you'll see it in paintings, you'll see it in films.
You'll see it at the Colosseum. There's a cross there.
There are inscriptions up there saying that there were martyrs put into the arena. There's a cross there as well, and there are Christian ceremonies carried out at the Colosseum now. But we don't have any evidence that Christians were actually martyred within the Colosseum itself.
So if there's so little in Tacitus and nothing in Suetonius, then where is our evidence coming for interaction between Christians and Romans?
Besides a few very brief and elusive accounts, the main source we have for Romans executing or persecuting Christians comes from the younger Pliny, which again is late. He's writing around the same time as Tacitus. In fact, we can date quite precisely when the relevant letters were, because what we've got from the younger Pliny are letters. He's writing in around 100 CE. Book 10 of his letters are all letters written to the emperor at the time, who's Trajan. At the time, Pliny is a governor. He's governor of Bithynia, which is in modern Turkey. And while he's in Bithynia, he writes to Trajan and says, I don't know what to do with these Christians. This is what I've been doing so far. I don't really have much experience with this. Now, that in itself suggests he knows other people have dealt with Christians, as he'd put it, and they have punished them or executed them.
And he didn't go into a lot of detail as what the Christians were doing. It seems to be a lot of assumed knowledge on Trajan's part. So I assume Trajan would be well versed in what Christians entail.
I think we can infer that from the letter. It's difficult to say. Again, the letter itself suggests that it's deviant practices, it's meeting together, and that's actually where the best evidence comes from, that they're not participating in Roman religious rites. Because one of the things Pliny says he's doing is he sort of gives the Christians a chance to recant. and he gives them a chance to give an offering to a deified emperor or to Roman gods. All right, so that's where it's clear that there is some kind of clash between Christian religion and Roman religion. If you prove that you're a practitioner of Roman ritual, then that's a way of proving you're not a Christian, and therefore that will get you off the hook. But he specifically wants them to recant and say they're not a Christian. And within that letter, it's clear that it is still about secret meetings and societies. And that's the thing that really worries him. Trajan writes back and says, yes, you're doing absolutely the right thing. He's actually quite curt and I don't think really wants to be bothered with this very much. Yes, get on with it, Pliny, and carry on with this. And basically, it's fine. If they refuse three times to recant, then you execute them. It's quite matter of fact in a way. It's almost like they're a bit bothersome to Pliny. They don't fit with what should be the sort of normal rules of society. He does talk about them being sort of depraved. He doesn't go into details about why he thinks that. But that seems to become the sort of the norm. Tacitus had said much the same. Tacitus has a great line about it's a depraved sect. All the most disgusting dregs of society collect in the city, because it was happening in the city of Rome there. So this idea that they're part of a continuum of what's wrong with our society. And it's not very specific about what the Christians do that annoys the Romans. There's just a kind of general feeling that they don't fit in and they need to be got rid of. But what Trajan also says that's quite interesting relates to Pliny reporting that there have been pamphlets going around, sort of accusing people, that accusing someone of being a Christian is sort of a way of perhaps getting rid of someone you don't like much.
Right.
So you inform on them. You could make parallels with witch hunts that have happened in other societies, but Trajan makes it very clear he doesn't want that witch hunt. He doesn't want the persecution. He doesn't want people to be informed on. It's just that if Pliny comes up against an accusation and incontrovertible evidence, then he has to do something about it. But I get the impression when I read these letters that really Trajan would rather not have to deal with it, that if it can slide under the radar, if it's not pointed out to Pliny, then he doesn't really need to deal with these people called Christians. So it's not as if they're going out there and looking for them. All right, it's not like Reds under the bed. It's not Christians under the bed and they need to be rooted out. It's just that we don't accept these practices, whatever they are. And that means if someone points it out to us that this person is carrying out Christian ritual, then yes, we have to go through our policies and go through the motions and they might end up getting executed. But it's very procedural. There's not this strong feeling of we need to get rid of these people. It's more that they don't follow our practices. Okay, someone's told us that that person's a Christian. Let's go and investigate.
Mm. At this point, we basically get out of Roman accounts that mention Christians at all. The Christian authors take over, don't they?
Mm-hmm. Eventually. They're starting reasonably early. And in terms of talking about Romans, of course, they see them as pagans and the other. And as I say, they're mostly defending themselves against the kind of practices that the Romans claim that they carry out. And that's where we get that guide from, that the Romans might regard them as wrongdoers and criminals because of weird rituals. And it's not just cannibalism, also incest and weird sexual practices that the Christians seem to have to defend themselves against. But they're sort of the accusations that the Romans might focus at any, as they see it, deviant sect. So I'm not sure they see the Christians as that different to other non-core religions. They're sort of one of many that they have to deal with. And you know, I think that generally the Roman attitude is to want to integrate. And one of the problems with Christianity is it won't integrate with paganism. It has severe problems with paganism, obviously. And so, of course, they can never really integrate it. However, it should be mentioned that although this is sort of beyond my expertise because it's in the 4th century, when Constantine accepts Christianity, he's the first emperor to sort of open himself up to Christianity after the Battle of the Milvian Bridge, where he says he sees a vision of the cross in 312 CE. There are various theories I know of that Constantine actually makes it one of the religions of the Roman Empire. So he's not out to sort of replace paganism immediately. Although over that 100-year period that follows, it pretty much does. So the 4th century, as I understand it, is the time where any of the conflict that's going to happen in officialdom, that happens. And there are sort of blips where paganism has a resurgence. But by the time you get to the 5th century, Christianity has sort of won. It's won that battle, and paganism is on the way out.
That's Dr. Rhiannon Evans, a lecturer in Ancient Mediterranean Studies at La Trobe University, and you have been listening to Emperors of Rome. If you like this podcast, you can find it on iTunes. Please leave a review there and tell your friends about it. We've got some lovely feedback comments on iTunes from different countries, but it'd be great to see how many countries are actually listening to this podcast. So in particular, if you're from outside Australia, Canada and the USA, leave a review there. And if you're from there, please leave a review, because it'd be great to hear what you think about the podcast. Rhiannon and I are also on Twitter. Rhiannon is at Dr. Rhiannon Evans, and I'm at Nightlight Guy. And Emperors of Rome also has a Facebook page. And if you must, and if you like, please go to the Facebook page and discuss Romans and Christians. Until the next podcast, I'm Matt Smith. You've been fantastic, and thanks for listening.